Every class I give about Prabhupada, I have to remember. These are my pastimes, so I have to remember the pastimes. And I was thinking of prasadam pastimes. And I thought of a couple, and I think one of them I already told you. I'll tell it again, just in case I didn't. This took place at Rath Yatra Festival. And the Rath Yatra Festival, the prasadam was some kind of sweet bread, some cherries. So I guess they got donation of cherries. And I don't remember what else. Okay, you can hear. So I don't remember what else, but it was like some kind of sweet bread cut in squares, about 2 inches thick, 3 inches around, some cherries, some, you know, not conventional prasadam. And Prabhupada gave a lecture, and then after the lecture, they gave him that prasadam because they wanted him to eat it, you know, having Prabhupada tasted it, then they would distribute it. And he just took a little, and he made, I was right there, so I saw he made kind of a sour face. He just took like one cherry or something. And then later on, he said that, he commented on that prasadam, that that wasn't proper. And he said, I don't know if he said it that time, but I definitely remember another time he said, feast means puris, sabji. Dal is not a feast. Dal is not a feast. Puri, sabji, for halava, nectar. He might have said pakora or something fried, some chutney. You know, that was the idea. Something nice. And often, feast for us also meant fried in ghee. Sabji fried in ghee. So, at least when I was a younger devotee, the feasts were quite like what you would expect on a holiday. That was the normal Sunday feast. It was really, you know, usually 10 preparations. So you'd have samosas, chutneys, 2-3 vet sabjis, puris, usually rice, some kind of fancy rice, halava, sweet rice. It's quite elaborate. There's another story. I may have told this also, but since we're on prasadam, I'm just trying to think of prasadam stories. There was a program, I think it was Hyderabad, either it was an opening of the temple or opening of something or some program, but they had hired some men to cook. I think they were just like local workers. I don't even think they were Brahmins anyway. From what I was told of the story, that prasadam was so bad that you'd see these plates full of prasadam just left. And I'm not saying this is a joke, but I think it's true that even the dogs didn't eat it. Some, I don't know how you could make something that so bad the dogs wouldn't eat it. So, I have to say, anyway, Prabhupada was really upset. I was really upset. And he was very heavy with the temple president. Very, very heavy. But after that, he wrote a letter. He had a letter sent to every temple in the movement. And he said, you should have nice prasadam on hand. And anytime anybody comes, you should always have nice, you know, like the same thing, sabji, puri, halava, like that. But for 20 people, should always be on hand. And then when anybody comes, you offer them prasadam. And then if you finish, you re-cook it. You cook it again, so it should always happen. And then what's ever left at night, then you take. So that was the result, that was the order that came from that incident where the prasadam was so bad nobody would eat it. And so it shows how important prasadam is. Now, we had organized in San Diego. San Diego Temple was called New Govardhan. So we went on Govardhan Puja. We were organizing big festivals, outdoor festivals in the park. So many devotees would come, and then so many non-devotees would come, and we would make buckets full of gulab jamuns, like garbage cans high, full, two, three, like lots. And we were, I can't remember what else we made, but I remember that gulab jamuns, it's a lot of gulab jamuns, thousands. And at that time, Prabhupada said something interesting, because what we would do at the festival, we might have a play, and then we'd have a talk, and then we'd have kirtan, and then, of course, prasadam. And prasadam is always nice. But the president wrote to Prabhupada, and he told him about the program, and Prabhupada said, don't speak for more than 10 minutes. And Prabhupada said, nobody's interested in dry philosophy. And he wasn't talking about someone else's philosophy. He was talking about our philosophy. He was just making the point that philosophy in general is dry. So he said, main thing is kirtan and prasadam and 10 minutes maximum speak. Is that interesting? So you can see prasadam and kirtan were the main strategies. And even what we saw with Prabhupada in 26 Second Avenue, even in the days when they didn't have much money, that every evening he would cut up some fruit and he would distribute, so everybody would get prasadam. And sometimes we saw that Prabhupada would have a heated debate with someone in his room, and then at some point he would just stop it and say, give him prasadam. And everything became cordial and friendly. So that was the tradition. It didn't matter, you're having an argument. Okay, finish the argument, take prasadam, give him more prasadam, like that. So, just trying to think if there are any prasadam leelas. Another prasadam leela was Ram Naomi, 1975. And I believe that was the first, and it was, the message we got was that we actually should fast the whole day. Our Prabhupada let us take prasadam at noon, and it was Ekadasi prasadam, and it was the first time that we ever had Ekadasi prasadam breaking a fast. We'd never done that before. Gaurpurnima or any holiday, Janmashtami, we always had full prasadam. So that was the introduction. But the message we got was that Prabhupada didn't think that we could make it without prasadam. So let us take prasadam at noon. Now there's some controversy whether is it noon or it's in the evening. Because apparently Ramchandra appeared in the evening, and that's when it should be, but on the calendar it says noon. But at least we had that experience that we had it at noon on Ram Naomi 1975 in Vrindavan. Another prasadam lila, quite interesting prasadam lila, is that when the movement was young, and maybe this was a situation for some of you, when we installed deities, there weren't a lot of devotees, there weren't a lot of Brahmins. So you had very small temples with two, three sets of deities. I remember we had three sets of deities and 18 devotees, and of those 18, all weren't Brahmins. So basically, in a small temple like that, and there was no congregation, so it was just the temple devotees do all the puja. So everybody had to do puja or cooking. I did puja also. I did cooking. I was doing a lot of cooking. One point I was cooking breakfast every day. There weren't that many devotees. You had, three, four, five, six devotees on the altar in the morning. So somebody had to cook. And I don't remember that we ever were trained how to cook. In those days, the training was more like just go and pray. You had some acquaintance, you maybe watched devotees, but I never was officially trained. It was all like kind of just learn as you go, here's a cookbook, or you may have watched somebody, you got some general idea, or if something were difficult, maybe you would ask somebody. So that was a kind of a standard in those days. It was just you go in and you depend on Krishna. But all the prasadam was made really well. Then there's another prasadam story. It's really a nice story. Prabhupada never took Mahaprasadam. He always had people cooking. But in Australia, he would eat the maha because he liked it. I don't know how he came to know about it, but I was told in Australia he would eat maha. I don't know if that meant every meal, but I got the impression he would eat maha for his meals. They weren't cooking. Something like that. At least in that temple, he was eating the maha. And so one day he was eating the maha and he asked his servant, who has made this prasadam? And then they told him that Korma Prabhu has made it, and Prabhupada said, so bring him in. And so he complimented him. But Prabhupada said something interesting. He said, thank you for following the regulative principles, which Prabhupada could tell by eating the prasadam, that Krishna had been pleased by it and accepted it. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Other prasadam stories were sometimes devotees would tell Prabhupada about something that they didn't think was nice. So then the word got out, Prabhupada doesn't like it, don't offer it. Where maybe Prabhupada always said, well, if it's not nice, don't offer it. But he never had it. And then I think there are stories where later on he actually had it, and the very thing that he was told wasn't nice, and then everybody assumed we shouldn't offer it, that it was offered to him later, and he said, this is very nice. So you have cases like that. Or I think there are other cases in which something wasn't prepared well, like they offered Prabhupada a grapefruit. Generally, when we offer grapefruit, we mix sugar or honey or something. So it may be some incident like that, where he was offered grapefruit, it wasn't sweetened, or he was offered some sabji that he'd never had before, but it wasn't prepared well, and he just said, I don't like it. So then the word got out, don't offer grapefruits, don't offer, I think it was broccoli, Prabhupada doesn't like broccoli, things of that nature. So it's like, a lot of times we say Prabhupada said something. Number one, he may not have said it, but number two, it may have been in response to somebody telling him that something is bad. So he said, then if it's bad, don't use it. But it wasn't a judgment on his part. It was just someone told him that. And then the word would go out that this is bad. So I don't know if you can investigate these things if somebody says that Prabhupada said this. What the source is, go back. But just for your information, sometimes there were foods that apparently Prabhupada didn't like because either it wasn't prepared well or he was just told they're not nice. He said, I don't like this. Okay, that means this sabji is not good. But that's not the case. There were other prasadam stories in which devotees would complain to Prabhupada that some devotees are eating separately because they don't like the prasadam. And Prabhupada said, no, we should all eat together. That's a principle, taking prasadam together. And he said, it's not good if you're cooking separately. All the devotees should take together. So So then one devotee said, well, the temple charges us for prasadam. And if we buy it ourselves and cook it, it's cheaper. And Prabhupada said, okay. If it's cheaper, then cook it. You know, so you see how he just would change. So if it's cheaper, or... But then another devotee said, but the temple doesn't offer food that I eat. It's not my diet, or it's difficult to digest, or it's too heavy. In the morning, they offer a heavy breakfast. And Prabhupada told the leaders in this that you should offer so everybody can be satisfied, so everyone could take prasadam together. So that was a spiritual principle. Of course, the other principle is whatever is offered, you take. But as people get older, that's not always easy. So at least Prabhupada stressed the point of taking prasadam together. I don't remember during Prabhupada's time there was anything such as a Sunday feast that wasn't extremely opulent. I don't think there was ever a time we made them very simple. I think that came later. So I don't know why. Temples didn't have money. People weren't donating well, but It was one of my godbrothers made a point. It was quite interesting. He won Rath Yatra. I guess there wasn't enough money to do prasadam elaborately. Like, you know, maybe 30,000 people are coming. It's expensive. And so they'd have something like potato salad. You familiar with potato salad? It's like potatoes and cream or yogurt sauce. And, you know, they're cold. And you maybe mix some pepper or celery or something. Or some pasta. So they'd serve something like a potato salad, pasta, maybe a little olive or something. And one of my godbrothers made a nice point. He said that we're trying to get people away from meat eating. So if we just give them a potato salad or pasta, you know, they're used to that. It's not unusual. It's not special. So I always remember in Prabhupada's time that everything was very Indian. Not spicy Indian, but very Indian. And the idea of cooking in ghee was one of Prabhupada's ideas to get people off of meat, because he felt that the meat eaters would be satisfied. If it's cooked in ghee, it would have a flavor. And certain foods cooked in ghee taste a little bit like meat also. So, I don't know, in India people maybe they don't like eating food cooked in ghee. They're not used to it. But that was the standard in the West. Get people off meat. So, you know, you offer them a potato salad or pasta or something, that they already eat that. It's something to consider if you're just giving people something they're used to. If you give them something special, then that has power. And of course, it also obviously has power to make them Krishna conscious. Let me see if I can think of any other prasadam leela during Prabhupada's presence. Well, another thing Prabhupada used to do, and you may have seen this in videos, is after class he used to give out cookies to the children. And one devotee tells a story that for some reason, they decided to stop giving out cookies. I don't know. Maybe they felt it was a burden on Prabhupada. He had to spend like 10 minutes giving out cookies to kids. I don't know the reason, but there was one devotee, and she made the cookies. And then she was told, don't make cookies anymore. And she was attached to that service, so she went and made the cookies anyway. And she made them anyway, right? So Prabhupada gave the class. After the class, he said, where are the cookies? And if she had followed the order of her authority, she wouldn't have made them. But fortunately, she did, and there she was with the cookies. So that was a regular leela of Prabhupada. Have you seen that on videos? You see the mothers come up with the kids. And Prabhupada, if the kid's old enough, we'll put the cookie in the kid's hand. So that was That was another prasadam lila of Prabhupada. I had a prasadam lila I think I mentioned before when I went to a meeting with Prabhupada. It was the temple president's meeting, and as Prabhupada was just finishing prasadam, and as we walked in, he took some dried fruit and nuts off his plate and he gave it to each of us one by one. So there was always this, give them prasadam, you know, and of course getting prasadam, which is maha from Srila Prabhupada, maha maha, then of course it's special that anyone would want. So there was, then, you know, one thing we understand is because one of the exchanges of love is giving food. So there was a Prabhupada always, you know, that's, he actually, I think he said in Nectar of Instructions how we reciprocate with people. They invite us to their house to feed us, we feed them. So it's an important, not only, you could say, an important part of devotional practice, take prasadam, but it's also part of that practice of giving gifts, giving prasadam. So Prabhupada always did that. Always, always, always. And then what? One of the things that we learned to do, I don't know if you do this here, but you should. One of the things we learned to do, and devotees originally did that with the Beatles, is that if you want to cultivate relationships with people or you want to thank people who have done special service, made special contributions, either financial or time-wise or a special sacrifice, you either save prasadam and bring it to their home, or you make special prasadam and you make sure they get it. And there was one point where devotees had a program and they were sending maha sweets to donors. Like, I think Burfi will last. So people were donating all over the country, they would send them. But other things that we did were, let's say we needed permission to do Rath Yatra and it was difficult to get, and we'd convince somebody or somebody, some authority, out of their own kindness, gave us permission, although maybe it wasn't legal or difficult to get. Then we would always like make a cheesecake or make something really nice and bring it to them. Another story was, and I've told you before, that devotees often were being harassed when they distributed at airports, and the reason being is that they were in sight of the workers on a regular basis, and some of their tactics were a little, were not so straightforward, and were kind of reeking of a lot of salesmanship and not so much, and some lack of honesty. So, as I mentioned, naturally, there was an unfavorable attitude with workers, and some of them really were upset, and they would even stop people. They would tell people don't buy these books, or they would say something nasty about us. And then the devotees started bringing cookies to the airport every day, or cake, or whatever they brought. And it changed. It changed the environment, it changed the atmosphere. Just by bringing cookies every day, atmosphere was changed. So it shows the power of prasadam. There's another story. The devotees who do scientific preaching told me this, one of them told me this story. They'd have these conventions. So they'd invite scientists. They'd have conventions, which they call the synthesis of science and religion. So they'd have religious speakers, and then they'd have scientists. And they were trying to, you know, synthesize, see where the common ground is. But this devotee was telling me, he said that these kinds of people, you know, because they're scholars, academics, you know, there's a certain paradigm, so they're not so open to spiritual teachings because they don't feel they're really grounded in science. And he said there would tend to be a bit of argumentation in the discussions and the presentations. And then they would have lunch. And he said after lunch, it's completely changed. People were very open to listen, very happy to listen. They weren't arguing. So there is power in prasadam. And Prabhupada felt it would help people tremendously. So we never want to underestimate the power of prasadam distribution. You know, sometimes you can't see what it's doing, but still, you know, if somebody doesn't become a devotee right away, that's not the point, but it's acting. But there was one time devotees would give, I don't know, they were in a park and maybe they just had some prasadam, so they were feeding the ducks, or maybe some people were feeding the ducks. Anyway, the devotees were there in the park with the ducks, and then they asked Prabhupada, if these ducks take prasadam, then what happens? And he said, next life they'll be human. Wow. So that's true for ducks, then I think we can say that would be true for humans. They get prasadam, at least it would guarantee human birth in the next life. So, if you ever have a chance, take prasadam with you, and wherever there's opportunity, give it to people. It's powerful. And you know, Prabhupada knew that. We know it, but we don't know it. When I say Prabhupada knew it, that means he sees it acting, right? So we might forget to bring prasadam where we could bring prasadam, but he always did it. And there's another story. He was on an airplane, and I think he had puff rice, muli, maybe puff rice with something. And I think they were flying to Venezuela. And the Latin American countries are a little more loose and free and friendly than America, North America. And a female flight attendant saw it, and she just grabbed off Prabhupada's plate and ate it. And Prabhupada was happy.
She got maha.
Yeah, so he wasn't upset. He said, this is good. The Krishna inspired her from within. Yeah. Then, as you know, in the early days of the movement, no one knew how to cook, so Prabhupada did all the cooking. He cooked for all the devotees, and that was one of the main ways that he was preaching. And some devotees said, Prabhupada, you tricked us through prasadam. And he said, yes, that was my plan. And then he said, if it wasn't for prasadam, none of you would have come. So it was a very important part of the preaching in the early days of the movement. And I think Prabhupada, he understood how important it was, and therefore there was no one to cook, he would cook. He couldn't entrust it to anybody, at least not yet. And then when other devotees were ready to cook, then he trained them how to do it. It wasn't just like, he could just cook some potatoes. He would show them. So he made a lot of good cooks. And then he said, this is kitchen religion. And then there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita that said that no sacrifice is complete without the distribution of prasadam. So that was always, you know, it was always an important element. Give people prasadam, whatever it is. Little, lot. Then another interesting thing happened. That on book distribution, what evolved at some point in our movement, maybe it was particularly around Christmas time, that we would go out. We'd have these little sugar cane candies. They're white and red, and they look like it's a cane, and it looks like it's wrapped in a red ribbon. And so we would go up to people and say, like, Merry Christmas, give that to them. And then either give them a book or just ask for a donation. It was just a way to stop people, kind of a gesture. So then they wrote to Prabhupada about that. And he said that was good. He liked it. He said it's like a friendly gesture. Create a nice environment. And then they asked, could we offer these to the deities? And then he said, what is it? And they said, well, it's just sugar, basically, some flavoring. And he said, no problem. And we were offering those We're offering those to the deities, Radha and Krishna, and then distributing on Sankirtan. So it was nice because we didn't have to make it and just buy it. And then Prabhupada said you could offer to the deity, so we could buy something, offer to the deity and distribute it. So it was nice. Even then, if we didn't need it to stop people, we would just stop them, say, excuse me, show them a book, but we'd still give them. So that was, I think, something to consider, where whenever we're meeting the public, we should always have prasadam. Some, you know, little, lot, whatever. Even if it was a candy. Yeah. Interesting, huh? Even a candy. So, let me see if I can think of any other prasadam leelas. I mean, I can think of India prasadam leelas where we all got sick, but that's not really prasadam leela we want to talk about. That was just negligence of proper diet. Well, we have another story when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan in the last few months. When people would arrive to see him, you know, he hadn't eaten in whatever, 3 months, 6 months, and then he would ask, did you get prasadam? He's not eating, but he's thinking about, did you get prasadam? Trying to think if I remember any standards that Prabhupada gave us. He did say that sometimes you could cook your own local preparations. Well, one of my godbrothers said that they had given Prabhupada chocolate. So I asked him, did Prabhupada like it? And he said, no. He said, this is third class. That's what, from Prabhupada's perspective, chocolate was third class. But some of his servants say that sometimes they'd serve it and he would eat it. So maybe that, I don't know, maybe he did like it, maybe he didn't. Maybe they just served it and he didn't ask for it. Later on, some devotees said there were stimulants in chocolate. And then Prabhupada said, well, if there is, then we can't take it. And so that's kind of where you have this controversy around chocolate, because Prabhupada ate it. And then someone said, well, it's a stimulant. Right? So then Prabhupada said, well, if it's a stimulant, don't take it. But my knowledge of chocolate is that the stimulant is not enough to stimulate. It's not enough to keep you awake at night. At least that's my experience, because we were distributing prasadam and we were making chocolate milk, and whatever was left at night we would drink and go to sleep, and it didn't keep anybody awake. So it may be true perhaps in large quantities, larger than we would normally eat. But anyway, that's where it came from, as somebody told Prabhupada. That it actually doesn't have caffeine, it has something else in it that's considered a stimulant. But I would say that there's not enough of it to stimulate unless you take a lot. Or there may be certain kinds of chocolate that have more, but I've never experienced that. So I don't think there was a definitive decision on chocolate, other than Prabhupada said, if it's a stimulant, don't take it. But then if it's not a stimulant, then why wouldn't you take it? Well, maybe it's just too much sense gratification. But it's interesting that Prabhupada didn't really like it. I mean, maybe someone has another story. This was early on in the movement, probably in 1969, where he was offered it and he didn't like it. He said it was third class, but maybe things changed. But I don't really think it's part of the Vedic diet. As far as I know, Prabhupada had fruit in the morning. He had ginger root. He had chickpeas. He had sandesh. Sandesh is made from milk. It's made from paneer, and it's got a lot of protein, so he took it as something that was healthy. Dal rice chapati sabji for lunch, and maybe something very light, if anything, in the evening, milk, puff rice. And he liked puff rice because it really it really bypassed your digestive system. You didn't really have to digest it. So Prabhupada used to say, eating puff rice is cheating because your body doesn't need to digest it. It's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's pre-digested or something. So he said it's fooling the body or it's cheating because you're eating, but you're not really eating. And then he would take rest in the afternoon, and then when he'd wake up, I think they'd give him juice. So his diet was pretty simple. There's a story that, one devotee tells a story that, you know, Prabhupada had a standard diet, but then some people would want to make more. That's always human nature, you know. You tell somebody what you want, but you're their guest, so you want to make something nicer, special. Especially if what they ask isn't very special. Then you're kind of depressed. We wanted to make something nice. And so a devotee tells a story that Prabhupada's servant came in after prasadam to get Prabhupada's plate, and Prabhupada was licking the bowl of carrot halva. You know, carrot halva is, it's carrots, it's ghee, it's sugar, basically, as far as I know. And when Prabhupada came in, he looked at the servant and he said, don't make any more of this. You know, Prabhupada was relishing it. But he said, I'm a sannyasi, I shouldn't eat like this. So even though he liked it, it was too rich. So he would say prasadam should be sumptuous, but it shouldn't become sense gratification. So I guess he was feeling like this sweet is very special. It shouldn't be something I eat every day. So he's eating it and saying, don't make any more. Don't make this again. It's too nice. I don't need it so nice. So then Prabhupada exhibited this simplicity in eating. And that story just makes it more evident that he wanted to keep it simple. Now, for us, it was a little different because, especially for young, passionate devotees, he was not in any way restrictive of their diet. Just to eat. He liked that they had halva and sabji and all these nice things. And they were eating these big breakfasts and they were going out all day on book distribution. And he liked that. Okay, so I'm going to stop because I might fall asleep. But you can ask questions if you want. Or you could make a comment. Prabhupada Prasadam Leela. Maybe you know Prasadam Leela that I don't know.
Well, I know I heard a lecture, 1975, or a lecture. They asked him, how can we change Mauritius? Prabhupada says it's very simple. Just do Harinam and distribute prasadam.
Harinam, so the devotee's saying here. When Prabhupada came here to Mauritius, they asked him, how can we change Mauritius? He said, it's simple. You do Harinam and you give everyone prasadam. Finish. Boss. Yeah. Well, the thing is, from the external point of view, you might think, well, how could you change a country just by singing and eating? Right, but we should never underestimate the power of the holy name. That would be an offense. Neither should we underestimate the power of prasadam. That would also be an offense. I told the story how a man who was very much against our movement, and he was creating problems for us at the airport, he later met us in another venue and we were distributing prasadam. He didn't even realize it was us. And he took the prasadam and he really, really liked it. So he was really, really happy. And then later on, he noticed that we were in dhotis and saris. And he told us that he was really one of our biggest enemies at the airport. But he really liked the prasadam and he was completely mellow and happy. So which it showed me something, that a lot of times when people turned against us, they actually weren't against us, but we had done something that was upsetting to their sense of integrity or morality or sensibility. And I think in retrospect we could say probably was the wrong thing to do. But then in a situation where he got such nice prasadam, it changed him. And he told the devotees that I was your enemy, but he really liked what, he said, this is what you're doing here, this is great, I really like this, and he was really happy. So, it does have the power to turn people's lives around. So therefore we just don't want to underestimate, you know, Prabhupada's statement, you know, kirtan prasadam. Yeah.
I remember once something very interesting, if you still remember, there was one press weekend, they were harassing us, calling us, Hare Krishna and Disneyland. Remember you wrote that, you gave a reply.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody else had written a negative article about us, and then I replied.
I think from A to Z. And one day he confessed, the journalist, he said, you know, I dislike everything in Hare Krishna, I don't like anything.
So Narayan's saying that we had a little conflict with the newspaper when I was here 25 years ago. And he admitted that he didn't like us. But
he didn't. I mean, he came back to us and he confessed, you know,
I don't like anything, but I like your prasadam. I don't like anything, but I like your prasadam. Yeah. That's. Prabhupada was okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wanted people to read his books, but so many times he said, "If you're not interested in a philosophy, then just chant and take prasadam." And then he would often say, "You chant till you're tired. When you're tired, you take prasadam. Then chant more. Just keep up the process. Keep it moving forward, chanting prasadam." Yeah. And then did I mention this? And Prabhupada was saying that none of you would have come if I didn't give you prasadam.
Yeah.
So what it means is that if we're going to distribute prasadam, it should be really good. You know, like here in Mauritius, you distribute prasadam and you have your like Mauritian preparations that everybody likes, right? And I don't like them. I don't think they're very good. And I don't see them definitely as part of a feast. I see them kind of like, you know, what you'd get in a five-star prison or something. You know, not like it's that good. You know, like what you get in a school, maybe a cafeteria. So at least we should understand that Prabhupada wanted us to give prasadam that was better than what people aren't used to. You know? So if you just give them what they're used to, they'll say, oh, this is nice. But if you give them something that's so much better than what they're used to, that's more powerful. So that was the idea of prasadam.
But nowadays, the standard of prasadam has been very low.
Everywhere.
Oh, it's everywhere. I was thinking that's only in Mauritius, but it's everywhere. Because nowadays we don't have even halwa in Sunday feasts.
Yeah, it's just a real halwa, you should cook it.
Yeah.
I myself, I tell you frankly, I make it a devotee because of halwa.
Yeah. People became devotees because of halwa. Yeah.
My halwa is so good.
It's called halwa.
My halwa is so good that when people ate it, they shaved their head.
Yeah.
Put on the dhoti, kurta.
We don't have halwa in Sunday feasts, very rarely. If you get a good sponsor, so then we are halwa.
Sit here.
If we have a good sponsor, then we would have halwa. If not, no.
Well, I think our general experience is if you spend on prasadam, then somehow our Krishna gives the donations. You know, people like it, they donate. It's good, they donate more. Yeah, it's... See, because the thing is, it's not that you just want to feed people Okay, here's a Sunday feast, here's some prasadam, and it's the same thing you eat all the time. It should be much better.
Yeah, it should be better.
It should stand out, right? Special, yeah. Memorable. Like, probably you can remember some prasadam that you've eaten in your life that was really special. You know, but, you know, it's anything that you remember must be special, stand out in your mind as unique or different. So, that's how prasadam is supposed to be. It's supposed to be so good, people remember it, and they want to get more. There's a story, I don't know if you've heard this story. A man had a servant, and he was really hard on the servant, so the servant would leave. And he was a good worker, but he couldn't do it. It was too difficult. So, he really wanted him back. And he came back, and so he asked a friend, how am I going to keep him? Because he keeps leaving, because I'm so heavy. He said, feed him basmati rice with ghee. Mm-hmm. Man didn't understand, but he did it. Then again, after undergoing the pressure for a few weeks, he couldn't deal with it. And he wanted to leave, but he didn't. And the man said, if you give him rice with ghee every day, he'll get addicted to it and he won't be able to give it up, so he'll never leave. So even though he was being harassed, he stayed because of the rice and ghee. So maybe some people will stay in Krishna consciousness just for the prasadam. Yes?
Yes.
So it should be good. All right? Okay, we'll end here then.